The Arthropod. The Arthropod is the home for the wonderful, weird, wacky world of insects. Hosted by Jonathan Larson, Jody Green, and Michael Scavarla.
Welcome back, everybody, to Arthropod, your entomology podcast. I am one of your hosts for the day, Jonathan Larson.
And I'm your other host, Jody Green.
We are joined on the mics today by fellow podcaster and Iowa State professor.
Hi, I'm Matt O'Neill. How are you?
You have a really good radio voice.
Thank you. I've heard I have a face for radio.
Oh, well, that's tough.
Can I just say before we get started, I'm so happy.
We are too. We're excited to have another podcaster on, a Cyclone on. Well, you're not from there originally, right?
Not from there originally. No. Originally from the center of the universe.
Oh, cool.
Quincy, Illinois. I wasn't aware until late in life that I was free to immigrate into Iowa. I did my undergraduate and bachelor's at University of Illinois, PhD at Michigan State. So I was headed east, and then I got the call.
So you're on campus in Lincoln, Nebraska.
Yeah.
Have you had a good day?
I've had a great day. This is great. Yeah, it's great. I was here 10-plus years ago, back when I first started Iowa State. After a year or two, they asked this new professor to come out and tell them what he was doing. And I think I said this in the seminar, I was just narcissistic enough to think that I had something to share. And I came out, and I don't have any memory of that other than being in this windowless room with a bunch of people and them all looking at me like, what is he talking about? And I think it was at a time in my life when I was really busy and I had young kids and I could not leave my wife alone with those little kids very long. So I think I drove out here in the morning, gave the seminar, and then at 5 o'clock I drove back. And thinking back on that, I said, that's insane. That was a long day.
That was a good husbanding, though.
I mean, get back. I'm going to play this for my wife. I didn't prompt you for that. Right? Jonathan, we've never met before.
No, and I was not paid for that.
Well, we were excited when you asked about us coming to campus to meet with you. And then I said, we need to do a podcast.
Yes.
I said, you email him or I'll email him. And then I started listening to your podcast a lot, repetitively.
Really?
Well, because you know what? I didn't tell you this earlier, but I actually really, love Erin. And I didn't want you to know that I knew, so much about her because we've worked with her. I think she's so great.
Yeah, she is.
And she'll come up later. But I wanted to say, so first, tell us a little about yourself.
Okay.
And it could be whatever you want us to know, right? You don't have to pick, your CV or anything
okay.
like that.
I will say one thing about myself. I'm very, I move around a lot, and I notice now that I'm moving in this chair away from the microphone. That's terrible. What about me? Originally from the center of the universe, Quincy, Illinois, small river town. Just north of Hannibal, Missouri. You all familiar with Mark Twain? Do they read that here in Nebraska? Do you guys read in high school Tom Sawyer?
I'm not sure if they read Nebraska.
Oh.
we're transplants.
Where are you from? Where are you from, Regan?
I'm actually from Ontario, Canada.
Oh, do they read Mark Twain there?
I would say no.
No Twain. Do they read any American literature in Ontario, Canada? Or is it just all Margaret Atwood? Just nonstop?
I don't even remember reading back then, but yes, Margaret Atwood.
That's great.
Ryan Reynolds?
Robertson Davies? What else?
I can't believe you turned that around on me.
I'm from Indiana, and we read Mark Twain. I did a report on Pudd'nhead Wilson High School.
Oh, yeah.
Connecticut, Yankee, and
King Arthur's Court. Yeah. Oh, yeah. All the classics.
Yeah.
So Quincy is just 15 minutes north of there, and it's bigger, richer, I want to say even older than Hannibal. Yeah. And all he wrote about was Hannibal. But there, I talked to a Twain scholar once, and he said that the story, The Man Who Corrupted Hadleyburg, is about Quincy Hadleyburg. And in the story, this guy comes to Hadleyburg, which is known for being this rich, big local city with very upright, appropriate citizens who are all, they think very highly of themselves. And this man comes in and with a scheme reveals them to be the hypocrites that he knew them to be. So Quincy allegedly is Hadleyburg. But other than that, it's a good town. It's a great town. Yeah, fantastic. Some of the best people on the planet come from there.
Okay, so part of my prep, because I don't want people to think we're just goofball.
No,
we're here for a seminar, and I didn't know if you wanted to plug any part of your research or what you talked about today, because I think they do record maybe your seminar. It was really interesting.
Oh,
I really like it. I really like the part where you started talking about how you didn't want to get bored, because it reminds me of, so I give my presentations to my daughter. Loves going to bed, listening to presentations.
Really?
So last night I was like, I have like 5 presentations that you can listen to. And you know what happened? I fell asleep.
Yeah. I stole a line from Mark Twain. He would say, the previous speaker talks until the audience is bored, but I talk until I'm bored. And my daughters don't even let me talk to them about this stuff. They don't let me talk about work at all because they're immediately bored.
How old are your daughters?
I was told there'd be no math.
Ballpark? 5 years?
The youngest is 13, and the oldest is about to turn 17. She's... yeah, she turned 17 in 2 months. Close enough, doesn't matter. Yeah, and so the oldest just walks out of the room. The youngest, I'm worried that it's neurological. Those eyes go in the back of her head, and she has no interest in anything. What Dad has to say.
So mine's 9, and Jonathan also has a daughter.
Oh, yeah?
So maybe that's what we have to start to. I don't know. Mine loves, I don't know. I thought it was a way to butter me up, I'll stay up later. I'm going to
help you.
And it actually does help giving the presentation, practicing it. Last night was the first time I fell asleep. So.
You should read the rule in a few years and do a daughter's entomology.
Parent talk. Well, can I do, I thought this through. Can I tell you how far off topic can we get?
It doesn't matter.
All right, so
we can edit this into 4 different podcasts with different topics.
Awesome. So the parenting podcast from the bug folk. So 2 things about this that you brought up. So I imagine this is like part of a nightly ritual with your daughter that you sit down and what she's in bed and you do a little thing that helps you fall asleep, right? And you've been doing this for a while, kind of?
Yeah.
Like, if somebody else comes in, like if you had a grandparent or babysitter, does she go to her, to the babysitter? Now you have to do what mom does? Is it that much of a routine?
Probably not, because, she's an only child, and we don't really have a babysitter, and I don't think that she, the only person who could do that is probably Jonathan Larson.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I do see the life of spiders.
So our daughter, I think you ought to do that. You put a microphone and do a record it next to, what's your daughter's name?
Taya.
Do it next to Taya and see, see if Taya, if you get this right. But our daughter, our oldest, Marlis, was babysat by her grandmother when our youngest was being born. And grandma was there to, help her go to sleep. And, she would go into the bedroom and Miles kind of held her grandmother's hand and walked her in and said, okay, now grandma, here's where you sit. I'm going to lay down. This is coming from her. She's a 4-year-old. Doesn't matter. There's no matter.
4 is when they know.
4 or 5.
Yeah. 4 is when you don't need a manual for them anymore because they can talk themselves and tell people what they want, what they do, what they need to.
Yeah. So yeah. But they still need it. Right. So she leads her in. She's like, okay, grandma, this is where you sit. Now, you're going to read me 2 stories, 3 songs, and then you're going to hold my hand. And so we had this routine, right? And I thought by singing them songs then, that I could shape their musical taste later in life, such that when we're old enough to like drive through the country on trips and, you know, they had an opinion about what is being played, I would have shaped their musical taste early such that we would get to listen to stuff that I liked, right? So I would sing to them, you know, and they didn't know what was good or bad, right? They're kids, right? So I would sing to them, you know, my favorites, Joni Mitchell, Neil Young, Bruce Springsteen, the Ramones. I would do all this stuff and, you know, thinking there's a payoff, right? Like literally to the point, because I read out loud and I'm saying, like my throat was raw, right? I to the point where it was painful to teach the next day. But I'm like, there's a payoff here, right? So smash cut to 10 years later, we're driving across country and going out to visit my wife's family in New York. And I'm driving, so I get to set the tune. I thought, it's payoff time, right? So I put in Joni Mitchell CD. And I turn to the back of the girls. I was like, hey, girls, remember this one I used to sing to? And my youngest, who I did the same show, I hate this song, Dad. Oh, please, just get this off. I hate this one. I was like, but I sang this to you when you were young. So
is it a version then?
I think it was like a version therapy. Yeah, it didn't work. Did not work. What were we talking about?
You're telling us about yourself. And what we've learned is you're from Illinois and you experiment on your children.
Yeah.
Well,
that's it. Yeah.
How about the podcasting? I would like
to the podcast. Yeah. Yeah. So the podcast is with your bestie, Erin Hodgson. She's the field crop extension entomologist at Iowa State University. I'm the soybean entomologist. I have a research teaching appointment. She has a research extension appointment. And I was on this, I think I led the search committee that hired her. And I was really excited when she came because I was going to get a buddy to work with. And at the time, she had grown up academically with the soybean aphid, which is the pest that I work on. Oh, that's fantastic. I don't know how I roped her into this. I think it was she was still an assistant professor. She wasn't tenured yet. So I don't think she could say no. And we were down the office, down the hall from me, and I just always needed somebody to talk to, and she couldn't say no. And I think I said, hey, you know what we should do? There's this thing called podcasting. We should podcast. And it's really easy to do because we all use Apple computers. It's got this thing called GarageBand. Here, let's do this. And I think you should podcast with her and see if she remembers it the same way. Hey, Erin. How you doing, girl? Hey. I think the way this went was I got it going on mine because I was playing around with it. And then I said, we could do this, and we could do a soybean aphid podcast where every week we've got students out doing work in the field. We have a little lab meeting. We collaborate on some stuff. Let's report back to the people what we heard about in the field instead of, like, trying to write it up. Nobody has time for that. We don't want to get time for that. And we called it the Soybean Aphid Podcast. And we did it for several years. And every week from maybe June to August, September, we would say, hey, what's the numbers look like, blah, blah, blah. And it was just a few minutes. And then it became, because I can't edit, we would just talk about anything soybean related. And then it became the Soybean Pest Podcast. And then we tried really hard to do it throughout the year. And then it was like, oh, I can't really do it throughout the year because we just don't have that much energy. Do you guys do yours all year round?
We try.
I mean,
once a month?
One of the things, I wanted to congratulate you for the podcast on Monday because isn't it the longest running podcast, entomologically related?
It is
podcast?
You do homework.
I do.
Wow. Yeah. So
hey, we were super excited. Well, I was. And I told him to be super excited. He is. Right? And like that you have a podcast that I get to listen to. And because I commute, I'm in the car 2 hours. I love having something in my ear holes, as he says it. And I love like learning things. And the ones I really like, I like to listen to my ones. And because I know Erin, I can see her face.
She's very expressive. Yeah, she's great.
This is why I have questions too. But why do you think podcasts are so hard to keep going?
Ah, great question. Here's another line that I use often, and I attribute it to my wife, although I don't know if she actually said this, but it makes a
good
story.
Wait, does she listen to your podcast?
No. Oh, no. Oh, no.
My husband's never listened to the podcast. When I'm like, hey, you want to listen to this podcast? He's like,
dude. Oh, no. So two things about my wife. One, the quote is, and this is, you started asking a question, so I have, quote is, your facts exhaust my enthusiasm. Because I will just go and she's like, all right, enough. And the other thing about, does she listen to podcasts? No, quite the opposite. She makes fun of me. Because back before there were these iPhone things and podcasts and all this, I love public radio. Love public radio. And I would get she made the mistake of buying a radio that I could put in the shower. So I could listen to public radio. And it was like one of those sweet things you do when you're first dating and courting and all. And they're like, oh, you'll like this because you like. And then she immediately regretted it because, yeah, it would be in the shower. But then I would take it out of the shower and carry it around the house. And she's like, God, I hate it when you walk around with what she called the chatterbox. The big joke that God played on the world is I'm the extrovert and I spend 90% of my day at a computer doing science, which is just writing and sitting in front of spreadsheets and stuff. She is an introvert and she's a therapist. And she spends 90% of her day listening and talking to people. And when we come home, I'm just like, hey, I can't wait to talk to somebody. And she's like, I can't wait not to listen to another thing anybody says. We've been married for 20 years. Yeah, thanks. So the longest lived podcast, you're listening to, you've been listening to this. So there was a paper done by a chemist of all people who summarized, I think this chemist went out and found as many podcasts about science as they could. Yeah. Did you see this article? Are you guys in there? Because I think it was just published like a year or so ago. You double check. You can get the supplemental information and there's, I think literally thousands of podcasts. I bet you're in there. And they categorize it. So there's biology, there's entomology, and then there's like a chemist, right? She calculated the half-lives for podcasts, the way that molecules degrade. Right. Yeah. And ours is in the, I think, 0.1% of all podcasts because we've been at this for 9+ years. Yeah. So you asked the question, why don't podcasts last very long? I think there's two reasons. One is there were a bunch of people that when podcasts first came on, when they sort of exploded, there were a bunch of people, oh, this is a great idea. We can share our research. We can share extension, all that stuff. And they thought it was a medium like any other that they were familiar with, where you had to write everything out. And it was scripted and rehearsed. And that took a lot of energy. And I think the amount of payback for what they got in terms of feedback, for the amount of energy that it spent, that cost-benefit analysis, a lot of people quit. And the other thing that got us to a point where scientists were doing this is, I'm not the only one who said this, but I've heard it from others, so this isn't me, but scientists are ultimately novelty seekers. They are excited about new things. I mean, you've got to be, right, if you're in science, because you constantly think about what if, what's the new thing, what's the next thing around the corner. And when podcasting came out, those novelty-seeking scientists, especially those that were interested in communicating, sharing results, like, I want to do that. That's cool. I'll do that. But then as the effort to return on investment wasn't in their favor, they lost interest. And it's tough. You know? I think there's a certain sickness to podcasting. I think people seem lovely. We've never met before, but you're lovely, healthy people. But there's a certain like narcissism, extroversion that you have to have in order to want to even think that what you have to say somebody would actually want to hear. Right? And then the other thing is you have to have content. And for us, Erin's a bit of an introvert, but she has content. And she has an audience that she wants to reach, right? And I was like, I think this is a new, novel, possibly powerful way. And I can't stop talking, so, you know, come and let's play together. And we've been doing it for 10 years or 9 years, and it's been fun. So,
What do you think are the biggest challenges that you have?
We have is getting the two microphones to work in the same computer. Yeah, but for those not being able to watch the video, you just exploded.
Every single time. I don't know. I mean, there's not a whole lot of things to plug into, but we always mess it up every time.
I need some new set, right? Because that's been we have one of our hosts. He is remote, so he Skypes in to talk to us. And every time I try to route him into a mixer and into the computer, there's a problem. If I have changed the setup like each of the last six times we've spoken to Mike, probably.
You are orders of magnitude beyond what we're at. I mean, you've got, for those that can't see, at home, for the home audience, there's a box with knobs and stuff. You have, like, serious microphones. You've even got the little spit guard thing.
Yeah. Oh,
this is amazing.
I wish it took away my tint. Like, that.
Now I hear it. Yeah. Now
if you record yourself, either on video recording or audio, you will find out the most annoying things about yourself.
And if you're a narcissist, you won't care. You'll move on.
But no, yeah, the biggest challenge is, and also getting together, even finding a time, right?
Yeah,
and with Mike, we have a time change, and then we're all in extension, so our phones are ringing off the hook. So there's never a time we're podcasting.
Yeah.
The phone's not ringing. But this is a great place because none of us work in this department. We just got this really cool.
This is cool. Yeah, it's weird how science is often something where you work in isolation, but I'm in a new building. They build all these meeting rooms. It's so weird. Yeah, but yeah, there's a lot of meeting in science, but there's a lot of times when those meeting rooms are empty. Anyway.
That's a podcast episode. Isn't it?
The other problem with podcasting, you said barriers to it. Mm-hmm. So one of them is it's hard to meet. Managing your expectations is another problem. And what I mean by that is, I think the best podcasters in the world have figured this out. In that, if you're going to be good at it, you have to be routine and regular and don't answer this right now, but I want to know what your favorite podcasts are. My favorite podcast, the guy and their guys, the guys that do it have a routine. Like, and the content will be different, but there is a routine. You know, Mark Maron starts talking about himself for the first 5 to 10 minutes, and then he brings on the guests, and that is the routine every time. And Adam Carolla, he used to be one of my favorites. I don't listen to him anymore, but he was like every other day. There was content. And those routines built an audience. The problem with scientists and all, and you guys know this, you're busy. This is not your day job, right? You're not paid to do this. You don't get much feedback. We don't get much feedback from it. Although when we do, it is, it feels so good. And one thing I've kind of had to manage my expectations, I'm not going to be able to do it every month. In the summer, we'll try for every week, but it's okay. You know, and the point of that is, at least it's out there, you know, and people will find it, and eventually you build an audience. And ultimately, I think what I want out of it is not so much that we get a big audience, but that it's sort of a punk rock ethic of, see, it just took two of us and a couple microphones and a computer, and we're sharing this information, and if you enjoy it, great. And you can tell Aaron and I, we don't prep a lot. Aaron, she has written out pages of questions.
No, this is
amazing. Own it. Just keep, take it. We don't, Aaron has a cheat sheet that she sets up.
Well, Cindy says, like, you are prepared.
Oh. But every week, every time you guys come on, you have stuff, right?
Well, I need to know more than you because I'm asking you questions. Well, I have like a,
oh, I see. Yeah,
like
yeah,
a
yeah,
test
yeah.
for you.
Yeah. Oh, coming at the end? All right. Yeah.
But anyway,
but to answer your question, that man, it's okay. It's good enough. And I think a lot of scientists that started were like, no, they weren't comfortable with it. They wanted it at a certain high level and they couldn't maintain it and died out. And I'm like, so what? You know, and what we found is in building over time, people go back to that content. We've had people go back to our podcast and extract information from it that it helped them do science. there's a modeling paper Christina Balai published where she was looking for evidence on the historical year-to-year variation in soybean aphid population. She went back to our podcast and pulled that out. And I was like, that's fantastic.
Yeah, because you talked about, like, what are you seeing? Yep. How's the soybean aphids and things like that. And, I mean, like, you can even tell from the dates of your podcast when it was really rainy, you know, things like that. When things started coming out. So it's
because,
like,
we have a recording date.
It's like an audio journal.
Yeah.
So I think that's really cool.
Yeah.
Usually we will talk about, like, the things we're sick, like, things people are calling about or things that are coming in. I see your question. But I wanted to ask, so
we got time.
What is your favorite thing about your co-host? Because, you know, like, I mean, we work together and a lot of people think we're a duo, like we can't do anything without each other. Like, people will email us together all the time, and because we do segments on Backyard Farmers together. We are two separate people. And
how's that make you feel?
We are married to other people.
Yeah. I already asked, mic, I asked the Sam and Diane question.
The lady at the own show, she thought you were married.
It's kind of sweet. Is it kind of sweet, or is it upset?
You were getting your wedding.
So that's different.
He's a...
But, you know, so, it's it. What people see or what they hear, you know, I mean, there's that chemistry for sure.
Yeah.
Oh, you care about each other.
Even though she's
hilarious. Like, because I don't know if it's true, but I laugh a lot when I listen to the interaction between the two of you. And I know it's all in kindness. Because I feel like we have, like, he torments me sometimes. Or what did you say? I just want to aggravate you and tell you.
Yeah.
You know? And he'll tell me things, and I'll believe him. And then you have to stop, like, no, I'm joking. Because I don't think he would ever lie to me. So when he tells me something, I'm like, okay, I'll go act on this. So I'm like all, what, action?
Yeah.
So he's like, I think we should do this. And I'm like, let's go do it. And then he goes, no, that's not a good idea.
So what I'm hearing is you value the relationship. And he doesn't like waffles. And how does
he loves waffles.
I like
you like waffles.
He's in defense of waffles.
And how does that make you feel?
How does it make you feel if you don't like waffles?
I just want to say, I think, to those of you listening, I think I'm now like a marriage counselor to these two.
Every now and then we actually do say, hi, this is Welcome to Therapy. This is Jonathan.
This is kind of weird. No, this is good. Back to you, I want to hear about Aaron. What do I like about her? What do I value about her? Early on, a lot. She's great. In some ways, we complement each other in that, she is very organized, and very thoughtful in a way that, in some ways I'm not. Because she's the extension, I kind of jokingly say she's a public face for our research. And she is. I mean, she goes out and shares what we're learning through our graduate students and all with farmers in a way that I don't necessarily have the time or the training for it, because, you know, it's a science behind extension. And she has to think long and hard about what the message is and how to clearly convey it so that she, when she has that little bit of time with the farmers, she gets it across. And it's great. And she's a great sounding board for that. So I can, like, throw ideas off of her, and she'll mull around and think about it. And she lets me kind of, you know, verbal diarrhea stuff out. And then she'll come back and go, yeah, that's great. Yeah, that's stupid. Don't do that. No. But she'll also say, no, that's interesting. And if I get that positive response from her, I know I've got something. I know we've got something, you know? And it's like that. That having somebody who's like a good critic, like they say your worst critic, I say your good critic, who will challenge you, is fantastic, because if they make it hard for you, then everything else can be easy. That's great. And the other thing, which is a little bit self-serving, occasionally she laughs at my jokes, and that makes me feel really good.
But sometimes I think you're kind of mean to her. You're trying to trick her into some of those. these like trivia questions or things like that.
She
I
says that.
She says because that. You're like, I can just picture you, not now that I know you, like now I can see you and visualize what you look like. Like I got you. And she's like, you didn't say there was like all the above. Like you're tricking her. You know, like so you get her back in that way.
There may be some truth to that. There may be some truth.
But I love when, like, something about, oh, you mentioned the share fair that she organized.
Yeah.
And how many, she said, how many people came through. And then you, like, I don't know, it's math. And she goes, oh, you can do math. Like, I was laughing so hard. Yeah. I had to play the whole thing again.
Yeah. So even though I'm needling her a little bit, she gets in the best lines. Yeah, that's great. And it would be impossible to do that podcast without a partner.
Yeah, well, Jonathan did it for how many years?
Maybe. Yeah, it felt like a lot longer than that. I started Arthur Pot alone, and then what you were talking about with like all the prep work that you do beforehand, I was getting burned out, and so I needed co-hosts. And luckily, Jody and Mike were willing to do it because it's really changed the dynamic of the show, and I think made it better.
There's a meme. Have you seen this on the internet? There's a, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Right? Do you talk about this? And your audience can look this up, me. So there's a meme of that it's a visual representation of podcasting or what a podcast is. And it's got this photograph of these girls all smiling and, you know, kind of hanging out together. So that's on a wall, right? There's a picture of that. It's some advertising for something. And there's a kid, a real life kid, standing in front of that, smiling with his thumbs up, and it's a visual representation of what a podcast is for me, at least. And that there's these people talking, having a good time, and I'm listening in, and I'm part of the party,
right.
Even though I'm really not there, right? You know? And the fun thing with Erin is like, one of the cool things about her is we have other things to talk about besides the soybean aid thing. And I kind of think what we're talking about when we're in her office about what's the fate of chlorpyrifos? What do we know about the EPA's ongoing change, possibly in its regulation? And what would be the consequences for that? And we're talking about that as it relates to our research and her extension. And I'm thinking, I think there's an audience for that. I think people would be interested in that. You know? And yeah, it's a little narcissistic, but I don't think it's that narcissistic. And one of the other things is I think there's an audience for somebody to hear two scientists share frankly how they work through their ideas and their thoughts and all. Now, you know, not necessarily, I mean, there's some thinking out loud, you know, but because we're not totally unfiltered when we're podcasting, but there is a certain amount of like, what's it like behind the scenes? You
know? Joe Ballinger has talked to us before about he thinks that he likes it when entomologists and scientists do podcasts because it humanizes the scientist. It shows, hey, we can all laugh and joke around and talk about memes and stuff, and we're people too. And you can trust us. You can believe when we say something like autism isn't caused by vaccines or what have
you. Yeah, yeah. You've got more questions. Can I ask you one, though?
Yeah.
Can both of you one? Because I think this is related to what we're talking about. What's your favorite podcast outside of your own and mine? What's your favorite podcast?
You want me to go first?
Yeah.
I've been to a couple right now. One is The Dollop. I don't know if you've ever listened. No. It's an American history podcast. It's hosted by two comedians, and they do it every other week. And it can get a little raunchy, but they talk about weird, sort of odd historical things that have happened in the United States. There's one that sticks out in my mind. It was about this guy in Denver, the Spider-Man of Denver. His girlfriend kept him locked in her attic for like a decade, and he would sneak out when her husband was away. And they would continue their affair, but he lived in this attic and wrote pulp stories. And they talked about this guy's life because eventually he goes crazy and he murdered the husband and like tried to pin it on the wife that he was cheating on the guy with. So they cover weird topics like that. Another weird one I'm into right now is called Apocrypals. And it's a couple of dudes who look at the apocryphal books of the Bible and talk about the history of Christian doctrine and thought, and they're atheists, but they're not jerks about it. That's their tagline.
Oh.
Two atheists reading the Bible but not being jerks about it. That's where
that's great, though, because so mine are, I would say, mine are pretty popular
Wow, you just got thrown under the bus. Wow. For those listening, you didn't even look at him. Like, your eyes were pointed opposite side of the room.
No, because we've been driving somewhere and he put on some podcast. Remember that one? I can't even remember. Okay, so I like Radiolab.
Oh, yeah.
And I love Hidden Brain. This American Life.
Chakra Fernandez.
And I like Freakonomics when it comes, like, I don't know. And I'm not even into economics and stuff, but I like that. I'm not allowed to say. I like The Longest, Shortest Time. That's a parenting one. I think it's really good. There's some interesting.
Who is that? I've never heard of that.
I listen to a lot of parenting podcasts. And then I listen to, like, well, there's a podcast. Oh, I like TED Radio. But then, so I, my daughter and I listen to podcasts. We listen to But Why. I think it's called But Why, but we call it But Why because it's funnier that way. And we also listen to, Wow in the World. So she loves podcasts, and when she knows that Jonathan and I are doing podcasts for a while, she's like, I want to do a podcast.
I've taken notes. But Why, is that with two T's?
But Why? No, it's not. It's out of Vermont, and they just ask two questions.
Oh, cool. Oh,
ask questions. But Wow in the World is a, it's like science for kids podcast. I don't know. We like to listen together, I guess. And for a while, she wanted to do a podcast, so I let her do one on my computer. She did one. The next day, she wanted to do another one, and then she's done. So, yeah, longevity didn't go.
She got it all out.
Yeah. But I sent, and I didn't know what to do with them. I sent them to my parents, and I sent them to my husband's parents. And I was just like, this is a snapshot in the life of your granddaughter. Like,
oh, that's fantastic. Know?
And so we have that.
Yeah.
And she's just like, she can't think of more content or whatever. But I was like, not my podcast, we podcast.
She pod
faded.
Pod faded? Is that, yeah.
Okay, so can I go? Okay, so wait, do you have a fit for us today? Do you have a fun insect for us?
Okay. I think I do.
Okay,
I don't know if this is fun. This might be a little weird. Maybe a little bit of a stretch. It's fun for me. Oh, it's always fun for me. And actually, this came up in class. So I teach a class to undergraduates. It's called, with Dr. Aaron Gassman, it's called Introduction to Entomology and Pest Management. Basically, kind of insect ecology and then pest management. And in one of the themes to the class is pesticide use, insecticide use, safe use, and how to use it effectively. But I do a lecture on the history of insecticide, pesticide regulation. And I just did this last week. Yeah, because this is Tuesday. So I just did it last week, Thursday. And I learned something about myself giving this lecture on the history of pesticide regulation. One, I'm old. I was talking about stuff that happened in 1996 as if it was current events. And the students just looked at me blankly. And they're like, Doctor, well, 98, we're talking his birthdays,
right?
You know, we're totally not a part of this. But the, all right, so I'm coming to the question. Right? So talking about pesticide regulation. So here's the question for you. Well, one more build up. I spend a lot of time, maybe more time than I should, on the internets and Facebook and listening to weird podcasts and, InfoWars is something that comes up often, and Alex Jones, speaking of podcasts, he was on Joe Rogan's podcast. Yeah. And, I mentioned to the students about this, topic, and I said, you know, I think it's fair to say Alex Jones is kind of crazy. And think he admitted in court that it's an act and he's kind of acting silly, but every once in a while, there's a little bit of truth, right, that he just spews and twists and goes way crazy on, right? So one of the crazy things that he kind of built up is, right?
I feel like I know.
You think you know? Gay frogs.
Yeah.
So I'm talking about pesticide regulation and Alex Jones and gay frogs and how there's a little bit of truth there. And I asked the students, and here's your question. Maybe I've given you enough details you can guess this. What was the book
that inspired the 1996 act that was the last act of Congress to affect pesticide regulation in the United States. What was the book that inspired that act? And for extra credit and a shout at the bonus round, what's the name of that act?
It's the Reduced Risk Pesticide Act?
No. No. Reduced risks were a category that I think came out of that act.
But
that's not the name of the act. No, FIFRA is, FIFRA is 68. This is 1996. But yeah, FIFRA is the ultimate law, right? And it was amended in 72, shifting the, because EPA was created after FIFRA. No, that came a little bit later. 96 Act is, I'll give you that name first, and then maybe it'll trigger the name of the book. The Act is the Food Quality Protection Act. And one of the changes that was added to how pesticides were regulated in that act was the consideration for endocrine mimicking effects. And what had come out in the science and was summarized in this book was that pesticides can mimic the hormones of vertebrates such that it affects development. And there was some evidence in this book that in high enough dosage, hermaphrodite forms of amphibians and were seen observed when enough exposure occurred. And the name of the book? Well, and 1996, the book was Our Stolen Future by Theo Kolber. And it was a book that had like Silent Spring, but doesn't have the longevity or maybe the reputation, inspired the changes that were enacted in the Food Quality Protection Act, which was in 1996. And yeah, every time I hear Alex Jones talk about gay frogs, I'm like, oh, yeah, but Alex, that long. Anyway.
It's the wrong word to use.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm
going to
buy that book.
No, I don't have.
Rocket it up there.
Oh, yeah.
No, these are the
going
questions.
Going back to 1996.
These are the questions I wanted to know. Okay, so we know what your favorite entomologically themed sports team is.
Oh.
I've read it all the time, and I thought it was great that you talked about it today, because this is where I did all
shout out to FC Bugcatchers.
Yeah, what is your favorite?
Or not bug catchers. Oh,
bug eaters.
Bug eaters. Sorry.
So, what is your favorite merch in the shop? Have you looked at the shop?
How dare you? How dare you?
Look at it.
How dare you question my love for FC Bug Eaters?
What's your favorite merch?
From farm to pitch. On a t-shirt.
On the t-shirt?
Yeah.
Because I was going to get you the beanie. I didn't know how big you were, right? So I can't buy it. You can't buy somebody with no clothes. So.
From farm to pitch. That's fantastic.
Dude, that was like one of my other questions. But that's good. That's their hashtag.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool. Love how into it you are. And I wish everyone was. And I wish that they played
Have you seen them play? Do you guys follow them at all? Is that...
No, well, from after you mentioned it a lot, then I started looking, and I've been all over your website, and I was like, where's that brewery? So I should go. And do you know what's the name of the brewery that's
fine? That I don't know. Yeah, my love doesn't go that deep.
Lincoln's Backswing Brewing Company, because they had it all over their food.
They have a sponsor. Mm-hmm. That semi-pro team came out to Iowa and they played a couple.
And you didn't go.
I didn't. And we talked about this. It was quite a ways away and I was doing my wife doesn't like it when I call raising my kids babysitting, but I had to do some babysitting.
Yes, you know what? Yes, I agree with her. No, because Taya said that once too. Well, maybe dad could babysit me. And I was like, you know what? He's your father. Yeah. That's called parenting. Yeah.
But yeah, FC Bug Eaters are fantastic, and it's a remarkable change in the history of American sports that we now have these semi-pro soccer teams in Nebraska of all places, right? And they've adopted the name of your, well, it's the former official nickname of the university.
Yeah, in some places I've seen bug eaters.
Still?
Yeah, there's a place in Anaheim. Okay, last thing. So if you had a team, if you got to make a team and name it whatever you want, and this is off like some of your things. Like, I loved that Aaron asked if there was a Woolly Bears team.
That's just...
Aaron. The Woolly Bears, they'd be very cold hardy.
They'd be very cold, right? Very slow.
So they're talking the wrong way. She's got that. But what would you name your team?
Does it have to be insect related?
I feel like
you've
already thought about this. Like, why isn't that just like there?
Right on the tip of my tongue. Yeah, because, well, you know, nobody ever asked me how the world should be. I think it's obvious. So honeybees were my gateway insect into a career in entomology. And you know how, so this is a problem, like in high school, you've got, or any school, you've got boys and girls teams, right? So what the football team is the Cornhuskers. What do they call the women's basketball team? Are they also the Cornhuskers? They don't call them like the Lady Huskers or something.
It used to be Lady Huskers, but yeah. I think it's now just all everybody.
Good thing it's not the Husky Ladies.
You're going to get email about that one.
I wouldn't even think of having like a separate thing.
But you know this exists, right?
Wow, like, now there's that
Yeah, and but I think it's obvious the solution to this is because now football teams have. In Europe now, men and women's teams. And the women aren't quite there yet, but it's starting to build. So so here's the solution. The team would be the honeybees. And the women's would be the workers, and the men would be the drones.
Just the queen.
Well, it's a team sport. There's only it's a team sport. Judy, it's a team sport. There's more than one.
It's because the bees.
But we have pressure because we keep getting eyeballs through the window. Okay, last question. Oh, wait. No, wait. What's your team?
I would have to go with my fantasy football team, and I'd be the Rabbit for Rabbits.
That's good.
Okay, last question. If you could be any insect appendage, what would it be?
If you could have it, right?
Oh, this is a real Sophie's choice. You know, you got to pick from all of the possible appendages. I want to say operculum.
What does that do?
I think we're at the end of our time. And this has been fantastic. Thank you so much. This is great.
This is a lot of fun.
I don't think you're supposed to be. I feel bad for Joe Lewis. Joe Lewis has been hosting me here. He's the insect plant interaction guy. It's been great interacting with all the faculty. You get some really cool people here and students. The students were a lot of fun to talk to. Yeah. Talked especially with Judy Wu Smart students and all the work they're doing with native pollinators and honeybees. And give a plug to. You probably already know this. Learn with Labby. Do you know this? You have a student here, a graduate student, who does sock puppet videos about themes in science.
Awesome.
Learn with Labby. It's on Facebook. It's not on YouTube. Labby is spelled LAVI. Do yourself a favor. And, yeah.
Although the majesty of sock puppets doesn't really come through in a podcast.
But she does the narration and the music. She scores her own videos. Yeah.
If people wanted to find your podcast, where would they look for it?
That's a good question. You can find it on iTunes, Stitcher. You could just Google Soybean Pest Podcast or the Soybean Entomology Lab, and there's a link with all of our podcasts. You can play them there. And there's usually like a little link with the title. There's a title and then a little description and some links to additional information.
Well, thank you for being on the show.
Oh, this has been a lot of fun. Yeah, this is great.
I really appreciate you taking the time out of your schedule.
I appreciate you guys coming down to, because you're not in Lincoln. You're at the what'd you say?
I'm at the Inbound Lodge.
You came all the way from the Inbound Lodge.
Down by the river.
Stop it.
You know, if you ever need to visit Jody Gray and Lincoln, come to campus, come down to the Impound Lot.
She's in the 94 Buick Skylark.
leave your blue book behind because she's wheeling and dealing. That's fantastic.
If you want to find us on the internet, where can they find us, Debbie?
Arthro-pod.blogspot.com.
And on Twitter, we're both there. Just look up Bugs and Jody and you'll find us.
At JodyBugsMeUNL.
Thanks again for being on, and we will catch everybody on another episode of Arthro-pod here in the future.
It's time for our insect heroes to put away their nets and pheromone traps. Join us next time, same bug time, same bug channel, as the Arthro-pod gang make the world safe from poor insect podcasts. Until then,
keep on bugging.
Why are you always in defense of waffles?